You thought Millard, Kyprios, and McLean worked a lot already. Now they'll work anytime you want. Subscribe to the Hockey Central Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. This is the number one noon hour hockey show in Canada. This is Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Week one of Scotiabank Wednesday night hockey featured a doubleheader. Week two served up twice as many shots as you would regularly face in a single game for Jonas Hiller and the Calgary Flames, but they pulled out the victory. Welcome to Hockey Central at noon, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, simulcast on Sportsnet in the United States on the NHL Network. Glad to have you along, as well as across the National Hockey League in dressing rooms as they go through their morning skates in preparation for a busy night in the NHL. Darren Millard along with Nick Kyprios and Doug McLean. Three games last night. Chicago falls despite throwing everything at Hiller. Boston wins in a shootout. And Phoenix drills Edmonton 7-4. Intriguing storylines all the way across the board. And reminder, we will get to the three stars from last night in a little bit, as well as teeing up tonight's schedule, which features Milan Lucic facing the Boston Bruins for the first time since the threat in the handshake line in last year's playoff series. But what captures your attention more? I guess it's, are you intrigued by and embracing the positives of Calgary and that goaltending performance of Jonas Hiller, or the absolute despair of Edmonton right now and where they are?
What is the difference, really? Ramo wasn't as busy, obviously, as Hiller last night, but back-to-back games where their best player was their goaltender. So it can cover up a lot of mistakes. We've known that. It's the most important position on your hockey club, and Hiller was fantastic keeping Calgary in a game where they had really no business being in the game. And Edmonton, on the other hand, can't find a goaltender right now that they can definitively start without worrying.
Well, the frustrating part for the Oilers is that they jumped on their goaltending situation early and felt that it was a good move. There was questions asked at the time. You know, were these two number two goalies? Were either one of them capable of being number ones? Neither one of them have ever proven that they could be a number one. And when you've got a young, fragile team that doesn't play very well defensively, that's not a great recipe. So right now, the difference in the two teams is, without a doubt, one is getting great goaltending, the other is getting average goaltending. But when do we stop blaming goaltending in Edmonton? It's all the way around there. It's not just the goaltending.
The numbers for you. For those that look back last year and remember Devan Dubnyk and his fall from number one status to being out of the league at the end of the year. The October goals against average for Devan Dubnyk and the Edmonton Oilers as a team was 3.66, 0.901. That was last October. So far this year, through four games, the goals against average is up by 1.75 to 5.21. And the save percentage is 8.24. Both numbers this year, and last year was a disaster. But the performance, the stats, are off the charts worse this time around.
Yeah.
It's small sample. I agree with that.
Yeah.
But there's not a lot of patience there.
Yeah, they're restless, the fans. And, for a great hockey town and a great market, we talked the other day, this is 7-8 years of this, and the frustration is at a boiling point.
Well, they're worried they're going to be out of it by November again.
Yeah.
Like they were last year.
Yeah.
Who are they playing, Nick? Look in the West. Is there a team that they're going to finish ahead of when you look at how they're playing right now? I know, look, Nugent Hopkins is out. Eberle was out. They got one of them back last night. But, you're saying, who are they going to finish ahead of? And you hope that it gets turned around. And you hope that the goaltending gets on an arm. Look, they need their goaltenders to win them a couple of games here to get some confidence and get going, or somebody to step up. And it can't just be Taylor Hall.
I can't recall last year looking at the first few games saying that you needed to average seven goals for to win one game. And that's how bad they are defensively, that they needed seven goals.
Well, Doug, you did some research today. You're reading Matty and what he had in Edmonton. And this has happened before.
Yeah, when they won their first Stanley Cup, they gave up this many goals in the first, this number of games.
Four games.
In their first four games, the same. But they won 9-7 and 10-6 in those two games. And they had Messier and Gretzky.
No.
Grant Fuhr and...
Just mention their center iceman and then mention Dallas's center iceman.
It was a bad comparison by Jimmy.
What did Arcobello play last night? 23 minutes?
22 and a half minutes.
And 22 and a half minutes.
To listen to some people in Edmonton, Arcobello's their best two-way player. Now, guys, we all like Mark Arcobello, but that's asking a lot of him.
We're going to chat more on this with Louis DeBrusque from the NHL on Sportsnet in just a bit. But back to Calgary. What does a performance like that do for this team that had one of the toughest schedules out of the gate? One at home and then six on the road. Well, a team that wasn't expected to do much in the Western Conference, but now is above 500.
What it does is you sit down today as a coaching staff and say, okay, we do not want to be a puck possession team. We do not want...
We don't want the puck.
We don't want to touch the puck for 55 minutes of that game. Throw all the puck possession analytics out the window because they didn't have possession of that puck for 5 minutes last night, and they beat one of the best teams in the NHL. Hiller stood on his head, but Chicago were not crisp around the net. But hey, they won.
To suggest that last night would do a lot for your confidence, I think, is a bit of a stretch here. You're waking up and going, boys, did we dodge a bullet last night?
Yeah, but as a coach, you leave the rink saying, hey, it's 2 points.
Or look at it and go, hey, we're getting some breaks here.
Yeah. Yes, but we better clean up a lot of issues here.
But look, the two teams aren't comparable. So it's 2 points, guys, a lot of teams will not get in that building against that team. And, I mean, they're one of the premier teams in the NHL. We all know that. Well, so it's a bit, and look, they played pretty well in Nashville, that team. They dodged a bullet in Edmonton where they're outplayed. Goalies won. Ramos stood in his head in the third period in Nashville. They got a win and played pretty hard in Nashville. They deserve credit for the win in Nashville for me. And then they go in last night. Boys, it was a back-to-back Nashville-Chicago. So I'm giving Calgary some big time. I know they didn't, but I'm giving them big-time credit for getting that 2 points.
And just to draw the comparables of a Calgary-Edmonton situation past the goaltending, which we know has been a lot better in Calgary, you do feel better when you see Giordano, Brody, Russell.
And they don't have that.
And look at Edmonton
they don't
right
have
now.
That.
And I see Schultz. And they've built up Schultz in Edmonton, you know, the last couple of years. And he's now making pretty good money. But I see a guy that's struggling big time.
Played a ton of minutes last night.
And I don't know who that guy is on the back end now.
Where's Ferentz? He was brought in to be the guy. Now, look. Ferentz is a battler. He's a battler, and he's a number, but he's a good number four.
You cannot. What do you think you're going to squeeze out of Ferentz here on that?
We're going to get back to that.
But you're squeezing right. We're squeezing a lot out of Giordano and Brody. I know Ferentz isn't that. Ferentz is a battler, and he's a great number four guy. They need some number one, two, three.
You know who's impressive for Calgary? Johnny Gaudreau. We gave him a lot of attention last night. He had very little ice time through the first half of the game because of so many penalties. He was Johnny even strength of power play because he definitely was,
which is
Johnny,
what he is
shorthand. But Paul Byron is a player that seems to be getting better and better and better.
Yeah,
he was their best forward by far
and has been for a couple of games. And he's got speed and quickness, and he gets scoring chances, and he's got a pretty good touch and pretty good hands. And you know, another little guy. He's 5'7", 5'8", I believe, same size.
You see Corey Crawford giving it to Trevor Van Riemsdyk last night after the first goal that he surrendered.
Only goalies can really pick that up.
Do we know that he gave him a blast, or did he just say?
I don't know.
Maybe he did. Yeah. I know.
Whatever the case is, it was good television for Heels last night.
Yeah, I know Corey Crawford pretty good. I don't see that in Corey Crawford's personality. I'm sorry.
You ever get yelled at by your goalie?
it was always mentioned that you don't finger point. You finger dial if you're, you know,
so, going for pizza.
Boston pizza, but you don't finger point.
So no, okay. Goalie never gave it to you?
No, not really.
Remember Pete not Peters? Really. Warren Strelo and the Pete Peters drill. So what we used to do is Pete would stand backwards in the net. Warren would blow the whistle. Pete would jump around and you'd shoot the puck at him. Yeah. Okay? So then Warren had to get me to help him drill. So I would fake blow the whistle and I'd hit Pete in the backside with the puck.
That went over really well.
And I used to get yelled at by Pete.
I was too far up the ice to
doing extra skating
to really get yelled at.
You were working on your crossovers.
It's really the defense that get the fingers pointed at.
I thought you were too far up by the coach.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Was that,
Mac,
too.
Baltimore.
But Gustav Nyquist continues to score, but Boston wins. And that's a needed win for a Boston Bruins club right now that is really sluggish out of the gate. Their coaches are getting beaned.
I thought Brad May and John Shannon did a couple of great clips last night. One showing Krejci with a big hit at center ice that turned the puck over and resulted in a goal for the Bruins. Krejci hasn't been doing a whole lot, and they've got to find a way to get him going. And Bergeron, they did a role on Bergeron and what he brings to the table. John Shannon said the best number two centerman in the league. I dare say he'd be number one on maybe 23 or 24 teams. He's the complete guy, isn't he?
A lot of notes from Shanny last night.
You're starting to listen
to his expertise.
I don't want to steal the information, and I want to give them props. You know, I want them to know I watched the show. You know,
it's Hockey Central tonight at 11 o'clock and 1 o'clock.
Will the bartender turn up the volume for you, or do you just have to kind of try to read their lips?
I wear my earpiece when I go to the bar. I was home.
Hey, did you ever get hit on the bench?
No, never.
Did I not tell you my story?
Because Doug Huda got hit in the Boston bench last night, and he was towel on top. He's so running to the room.
I'm in Washington. In Washington, the Cap Center was one of the few buildings that you can watch the game on the scoreboard.
And
at the time, it was the projection, right? The projector, I think, was from the inside out.
It was one of the first Jumbotron things.
Yes, one of the first. And I got caught just watching it. And there's Bondra, and he does the big loop in the neutral zone, and he fires a shot. And I can see it, and I'm like, that looks like boom, right underneath the eye. Cut me for like 10 stitches below the eye, and the benches were right beside each other, and Guy Carboneau just looks over me, just starts laughing.
That's perfect. We were in Hartford playing one night. Brian Murray was the head coach, and Brian got hit with a puck in the first period, and they took Brian. He got sliced in the cheek bed, and so he goes off, and it was my first chance to be a head coach in the NHL. So we score two quick goals and go up 2-0. Brian comes back. He's a little dazed, comes on the bench, and, come on, guys, we got to get a goal. I said, Brian, we're up 2-0. We scored two. Do you want me to keep coaching and you just watch? Oh, he was sour.
He wouldn't be happy with that.
Then in Columbus, Dave King got sliced. He got sliced, and the blood was there, and he wouldn't leave the bench, and the towel was just red. So after the game, Dave said to me, did you ever get hit on the bench or the puck? I said, Dave, when I coached, I used to watch the game. Oh, he was sour.
Dick Todd got carried off one night.
Like, really?
Off, like, dazed and confused. And, like, half our team was screaming.
It's not funny.
No, I'm actually kind of surprised it doesn't happen more.
And the players laugh at the coaches.
Did you see the boys with Huda last night?
Oh, yeah, and it's not funny. I mean, it is dangerous.
Wow, it's okay when you know he's fine.
When you know he's just a cut. But, it's not funny, but there's a lot of chuckling going on.
No, it's funny. It's funny. It's funny.
Poor Hoods.
As long as you know he's okay.
Well, they flip it up, and sometimes you can't see it.
Look at them laughing. Just laughing, eh? Honestly, you know what? They should be wearing helmets.
That's scissors.
They should be wearing helmets.
Yeah, they got
it. It was an ugly stitch job.
And then put a camera on it.
Yeah, you've got to wear helmets on the bench with face masks.
That's what we're coming to.
Yeah. Well, you can't practice without them now on the ice in minor hockey. I've seen you on the ice with your helmet on.
Yes.
And it's important.
But anthem singers have no problem.
It's safe. It's for safety reasons.
Anthem singers. We should have helmets on anthem singers.
I don't know if you guys were on the show the other day, but you go to your local rink and the figure skaters are out there.
Yeah.
And they're jumping, doing these flips. No helmets. No,
and then the coaches all have them.
But the coaches have to
wear
them.
Which is a good idea. Yeah. It's a good idea.
I guess we shouldn't. We should. criticize safety.
No, you're the head. The head's the head. Let's be serious.
Jonathan Duran has
the
been
foot and the hand.
Yeah, they're all. But the head's the head,
and the foot's the foot.
And you should know you've had a few dings.
Okay, so for those that missed, was it the overtime hit that we did last night between the third period and overtime, the scrape? But you said something, and you misspoke, and you blamed Nick. Like you didn't take credit for it. What you just immediately turned around and went, that's what you would say.
That's what you call finger pointing.
What was it? What was it I
can't,
said?
Honestly, I can't remember.
I said a quote. It was like a saying, but I mixed it up, which in fairness to me, you do on a regular basis.
It's my trademark.
Yes. Okay. It's your shtick.
It's trademark made you famous right now.
It's made you famous.
Here's Louis DeBrusque from the NHL on Sportsnet. He knows the Edmonton Oilers as well as anybody. The Oilers falling last night 7-4 to the Phoenix Coyotes, and it's been 5 goals against, 6 goals against, 7 goals against for this hockey club, and still winless through 4 games this year. The goaltending has certainly not reflected what they anticipated this year, and everybody's starting to become very concerned, Louis, that they're going to be out of it by November. What will it take to stop the bleeding?
Hey guys, how are you? How are you doing today?
You're happy to be here, Louis, aren't you? And not in Edmonton.
Yeah, you know what? I was going to say I could probably back up the tape from the last few years and play back my answers exactly from there, because it seems to be a broken record right now with what's going on with Edmonton. But yeah, no question, guys. You know what? The goaltending situation was a question coming into training camp. They had two guys in Fast that, you know, and Fast and Scrivens, they thought that would battle out for that number one position. And again, two unproven guys coming in looking to make a name for themselves, looking to grab the reins. And from this point in the season, nobody's done that. And for Ben Scrivens, you know, listen, this guy's a competitor, and you guys had him here in Toronto. You know what he's like. He's one of those cerebral guys, likes to think the game. He's actively vocal in between the pipes. He likes to talk, but for right now, he just can't seem to make that big save when it's necessary to make that big save. And you mentioned it, Darren, 5 goals or more in the 4 games that they've played against. You're not going to win many games when your goaltender's not giving you that chance to win. And let's face it, they're not playing very good in front of their goaltenders as well. I don't want to put this all on Ben Scrivens and Fast, who's now injured, but they have to play a better game in front of their goaltenders. But the goalie has to make the stops when it's necessary.
We've talked goaltending. What about the blue line? I mean, seriously. I mean, enough already of the goaltending, but when is the finger going to be pointed squarely at what is going on in the back end there as well? And maybe more than that, Louis, the whole team defense.
You know, and that's the way that I would lean more, Doug, is the whole team defense. Because let's face it, the defensemen in the defensive zone are trying to do what they can do to be physical, to be active, to quickly attack and spend the least amount of time in the defensive zone as possible. But what I see happening is the forwards coming back and overcommitting on bodies. And we saw it again in the game last night. Two people going to the same body behind the net, wide open in front, goals in the back of the net. The defense has been a topic of discussion here too, and I think Craig McTavish tried to remedy some of those deficiencies in the offseason by going out and getting a key defensive-minded defenseman in Fane, who scored a goal last night, his first as an Oiler. And Nikita Nikitin comes in. Keith Ollie was also brought in that department. You have Justin Schultz, who's maturing. Jeff Petrie back there, who's maturing. It looked, and it still looks, like a better defense than they've had. It hasn't been that way so far through 4 games in the season. I don't think they expected this much of a defensive breakdown type of game through 4 games. But it is early. I want to still give it some time to see if they can work things out. And here's the other thing. Andrew Ferentz, who's the veteran, who's the captain, this is a guy that struggled. He's had some difficulties adjusting, finding that chemistry with a player. Petrie and him were together last night. And I think they're trying to do too much. I think the defense right now, instead of just having confidence in the forwards coming back, having that trust factor that they're going to be there and be there in a position to defend, they're trying to do both jobs, and as a result, they're not doing the one.
Louis, you know that fan base pretty well. Can they go through 2 disaster starts to the season, and can Dallas Eakins survive that?
You know, again, these are all the topics that we broke down and talked about coming into this season. The hot button topics in Edmonton were goaltending, were defense, were center, and Coach Dallas Aikens. And can he withstand another season like last year? And with the multitude of coaches that have gone through the organization in the last few years, you want to think they're going to give him the benefit of the doubt to try and give him enough time to turn this around. It hasn't been great, though, at the start here. And you have to look at it from the standpoint of you've got a ton of talent on this team. You have young bodies. Why can't you get them to buy into a system? Why can't you get them to play a certain way? And that's the question I'm asking. Why is it that it's so difficult to get smart players to play a defensive game that will lead to more offensive? Because that's what they want to do. They want to score goals. And I think a lot of people are asking that question right now. I don't know how many games he has, guys. I don't know if there is a limit there. Craig McTavish has stood behind him strongly. It's his guy. He brought him in. He wants to give him the time to mature as a young coach, which he is. He doesn't have a ton of experience. But you guys know how fickle the bunch is right now in Edmonton and, you know, how cynical the fans have gotten in Edmonton quickly on four games of the season, losing all four and only having 1 point to show for it. I don't know what the time frame is, but I have to think myself that it's not very long if it continues this way.
I wonder if it's inside the next seven games, which are all at home as they start a lengthy stay at Rexall Place. We're chatting with Louis DeBrusque from the NHL on Sportsnet on Hockey Central at noon. On Sportsnet 590, the Fan simulcast on Sportsnet with Darren Millard, Nick Kiprios, and Doug McLean.
I, you know, Louis, you've been around the game your whole life. Nick is played forever as well, and I've coached. How challenging is it to cover the front of your net in the defensive zone? Craig Ramsey is one of the best defensive coaches as an assistant, solid guy, and has done a good job teaching defense. You know, he did a nice yep. job with Roger Neilson in Florida, and he's done a good job in other places, Tampa. How complicated is it to play around the front of your net? I don't get this. I don't get that defensive zone coverage. It comes down to they're being taught how to play in their own zone. Either they're not telling them, they're not playing a system that they're capable of playing, or the players,
well, you've watched.
The players aren't good enough.
What do you think?
I'm thinking that the system is being taught and guys simply don't understand. Playing in the defensive zone is a commitment. It's a Absolutely. Commitment to doing what's right. It's closing off the first guy in the corner with the puck, having a backup player, typically your centerman. One defenseman's the guy in the corner, the other defenseman's in front of that, and then you move side to side. Do not complicate this process when you're trying to teach basic team defense. I don't get it.
Well, listen, I'll tell you this, Doug. As you know, I was a fourth liner. Okay, I was a guy that had to grind out to stay in the lineup.
You were like Nick. You were a good one, though.
Well, listen, the defensive responsibilities, though, of a player of my caliber were really important. I had to know what to do in the defensive zone. I had to get that puck out on the wall. That was my job. But in today's game, everybody has to play that way. Good defense leads to offense, leads to Stanley Cup championships. The teams that have won it, there's no question that's the way they play. The Los Angeles Kings spend very limited time in the defensive zone, and when they're there, you don't get many high-quality chances for. That's just the way they play. They're stingy. And I agree with you. That's exactly what I said before. I don't understand what the complication is here to just play a sound defensive game. And the offense will come off of that. They have the offensive-minded players. They have the players that want to play in the power play. The power play can be very efficient, can be very prolific. You know, these are guys that love to score goals, and they want to score goals, and they have scored goals. But right now, the most important thing for them is to take care of their own end, and they're just not doing it. And I honestly don't know what it is. To me, being the player that I was, I think it's the simplest thing to teach. I do. I think it's the simplest part of the game to bash into your brain and say, this is how we have to play, and the only way we're going to win is if we play this way. You look at the two teams last night, the Arizona Coyotes and the Edmonton Oilers. On paper, the Edmonton Oilers are the more offensive-minded team, and you can say the more skilled team. But why is it that now they have a 14-game point streak against the Edmonton Oilers? Because they play Dave Tippett hockey. They buy into the structure, they buy into the system, and they all play it.
Louis, you never found goal scoring just as easy as playing in your defensive zone?
Yeah, no, you know what? I always said I had a great shot, but it took me about 4 years to get it away.
Hey, you know what? I just wanted to end off. I'm getting sick of hearing how skilled they are.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear that they win some games.
I'd like to hear how nasty they are. That's the one thing for me. And then, you know, when you talk about defensively stingy teams and teams that are hard to play against, it's that physical nature, too. It's that being aggressive in the defensive zone, finishing your checks, being hard on the sticks, winning loose puck battles. I mean, listen, it's four games in the season, guys, but already we're having the same conversation that we've had for the 6 years that I was in Edmonton covering the team and now into the seventh year. They're all similar. You know, are they big enough to play in the Western Conference? Are they big enough to play in the National Hockey League? Do they have a mean enough game and an intense enough game? I do believe, and I'll say this, I do believe Craig McTavish has a vision. I do believe he's working on fulfilling that vision as far as the type of team that he wants to have. It's not as easy as it sounds to just go out there and build the team you want. You have to sometimes bring in guys you think can do the job until you find out they can't do the job, and then you have to replace them. There will be moves here.
The question is, how long can you continue to wait? Okay, and if Craig and a few of the others in the organization are going to continue to wait for something that may never happen, then that's not the sign of a good manager.
Yeah. You know, and here's the thing. McTavish has been active. He's been very active in the 2 years that he's been there. Very active offseason. He brought in big bodies. I mean, Pouliot, to me, was a good sign. He's going to be a good fit. When they get fully healthy, I'd like to see him on a line with maybe Purcell or Perron with young Leon Draisaitl.
Well, Draisaitl... You mentioned Draisaitl, and in a perfect world, obviously they'd love to go in the direction of the 9-game window with him and Nurse. But if things continue to struggle like this, don't you have to protect them and maybe, you know, get them out of this environment if they can't turn this thing around quickly?
You know what? Unfortunately, coming into camp, that was what you would hope to have happen. You'd like to think that, you know, you can bring an 18-year-old, show him the training camp, maybe give him a game or two, send him back to junior with some experience, and, you know, let him build his game. But unfortunately for the Edmonton Oilers, they're not in that position right now. They don't have the depth. They don't have the players right now that took that position away from Leon Draisaitl. He came in and essentially was creating better than everyone with the exception of Ryan Nugent-Hopkins in exhibition. What I don't like, though, is they put him with Neil Yakupov. For me personally, I don't like that combination. I think that Neil Yakupov, from his results last year, with his minuses, the way he plays the defensive game, I just think that Draisaitl would be better fitted with another veteran guy there to battle through the tough times, someone to help him down low. And they haven't started. He's the kind of player that does wonders when he has the puck on a stick.
Well, let's end it off in a positive. And you don't, I'm not going to say you have to believe this in your heart of heart, but this is going to turn around in the short term because of what?
Well, you know, because of 20 guys buying in. Let's put it that way. I know we say buying in, we use that phrase all the time, but to be honest with you guys, it's true. They have to buy in, they have to be committed to defense, and they have to play 60 minutes. There were times in that game last night where they took control. But those little lapses, defensive zone breakdowns, kill them every single time. And let's face it, they need some goaltending. They have to have a goaltender that's giving them a chance while they're playing 60 minutes of hockey. They need everybody to click here to get things going.
We're going to find out in this homestand. This is critical.
They got to make a major trade. That's what they need. They need to just tweak this thing. They need
trade's not tweaking.
Well, then they got a major tweak.
To make a bold move.
They got to make a bold move.
Listen, but going back to Louis Kahn, if you were sitting there and you had an 18-year-old centerman, okay, based on what you've watched, would Yakupov not be the last guy you would put with him, Draisaitl? Would he not be the last guy you would ever consider putting with him?
Yeah, I've seen a couple of good signs out of him. I know what you're saying.
But it doesn't...
-2 last night. Yeah. I don't think he barely played 13 minutes.
Well, this is going to go one way or the other in the next 2 weeks with this 7-game homestand, and it's going to be either fun to watch fascinating in a really ugly way.
Let's hope that we're saying, wow, did they have a great homestand.
Exactly.
Let's hope that that's what we're saying.
Louis, it's been fun catching up with you in the last couple of days in the studio. Really appreciate you.
Don't rush home. It's not pretty.
And take care of that tan, okay?
What, does he go to a tanning booth?
Is from Alberta you're talking about?
No. He was looking really pale.
Well, in Edmonton, it's because he's up in the trees shooting. Yes.
Shooting.
But here he goes to tanning salons, I think.
Louis DeBrus from the NHL and Sportsnet. Safe travels.
See you guys.
Have you You used to go to Tampa.
No, I don't have to. I go to Florida every weekend.
Yeah, I know. You come back, look like George Hamilton. Really gross.
When we continue.
You should see me in my Speedo.
Oh, God. On that, let's go to break.
Or we get sick.
Twitter's going to have fun with that one. And you opened the gate to that one, and they're going to pour through.
That's okay.
All right, Hockey Central.
Anyway.
Three stars coming up next. An update on the Tampa Bay Lightning and Montreal-Boston. It's the Habs' home opener, but the intrigue surrounds the visiting team. Plus an update on Daniel Alfredson. It's Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, simulcast on Sportsnet, and as well, worldwide on sportsnet.ca.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet 360 tonight. We have the Montreal Canadiens and the Boston Bruins coming your way. Jeff Merrick, Doug McLean, and Elliot Friedman with that one. Friday night, Sportsnet Ontario. It's the start of a home-and-home between the Detroit Red Wings and the Toronto Maple Leafs. Myself, Nick Kiprios, Damian Cox, and Sportsnet Ontario. And then it's Hockey Night in Canada with George and the crew on Saturday. Here is Cody Franzen of the Toronto Maple Leafs, kind enough to break into his schedule and stop by and talk about what's happened so far this season. And can you, I know that you were late getting into the lineup, but just give me an idea of how you thought that the hockey clubs performed in the first week and a bit.
Are you asking me?
Yeah, sorry, I'm asking you.
I just got passed in. I didn't catch the first bit of that.
Just.
Our first couple outings, we were good in the first period against Montreal and then kind of got away from our system a little bit. And against Pittsburgh, we played a little looser than we would have liked, and they were able to have some success against us because of that. But I thought we've taken a couple steps in the right direction in the last couple games here, and we're moving forward now.
Not that it's an awkward position, because as pros, we all know that there's certain situations that you can't avoid, and one of them right now is odd man out, especially on your blue line. So you come back in, Jake Gartner's out. Overall, is the feeling okay, or is it somewhat eggshells around there when it comes to, okay, who's sitting out tonight?
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, it's obviously, one of those situations where it's a very high level of competition. You know, it's still that feeling of camp where every game's a tryout, and when you got a player of Jake's caliber in the stands, it makes you play your absolute best hockey just so you're not the guy going in the stands the next night. I mean, that competition's healthy, but it's taxing. It's definitely, put some pressure on you, but that pressure is good pressure.
Cody, last year the pairings on the back end seemed to be just a little disjointed. You know, guys playing out of position, inexperienced guys with inexperienced guys. When you brought in a couple veterans, it seems like there's a potential for real good chemistry in the back end. Are you finding that with the partnerships?
Yeah. I played with Mo the first game and Dion last night. So, I'm not sure exactly how it's going to stay or fold out, if you will. But, I've played with Mo a bit before, and we play pretty well together. And I played with Dion the other night for maybe the first or second time, and that was a lot of fun. Dion's obviously a very high caliber player, and anytime you can play with a guy of his stature, it does nothing but help your game. So that was a lot of fun the other night, and hopefully we can continue that.
You guys changed assistant coaches through the off season. How much of the different feel is there in your room with those two new guys in there?
It's quite different. I think those guys have been a great add for our group. They fit our group very well. They're very approachable. They're guys that we can go to and ask questions and make sure we're doing things right. And they're good with communicating and keeping the mood light in our room. And I think that's a very important piece to have with a group like ours. Sometimes you can feel the pressure creep into our room, but they do a very good job of mediating that, and along with the older guys and other guys that we've brought in with our off-season acquisitions, and we've got a good group in our room right now.
Can you mention to Steve Spott to send me a note just when his symposium is? Because I am not missing that this summer. I'm going to be at his next coaching clinic.
I'll see if I can find that out for you. But Spotter's been great. He's obviously a big part of the keeping the mood light. He's a guy that jokes around with the guys, and I think that's a very important piece. And
he's a great guy. He's a great guy and a good coach.
Did that not happen last year or in the year before?
What's that?
Was there not enough of that last year and the year before?
Maybe a little bit. We went through a couple patches where we were feeling the pressure pretty good, and I just don't think we did a good enough job as a whole group. I mean, you don't put that all just on the coaches, but we didn't do a good enough job as players of trying to keep the mood light. We let the adversity snowball on us, and that's why I think the guys they brought in are a good fit. They're going to help in situations like that for sure.
How's your knee, and do you feel like you're back 100%? We hear Lupo may miss tomorrow night. He missed practice today. It's tough staying healthy in this league today.
Yeah, it's not easy. You're heading into an 82 game schedule, and you're playing a lot of nights back to back. We got another one coming up here, and I think we play 18 back to back games this year, and that's a lot. It's nights where you're going all your blocking shots, taking hits, all those kinds of things, and then flying and doing it all again the next night, and not necessarily having a full 24 hours in between. So it's definitely tough on the body, but I'm feeling good right now, and hopefully Loops is good to go for tomorrow.
How tough is Komarev? I mean, the way this, you talk about injuries, Nick and Cody, and you watch the way this guy plays. I mean, how much time is he in that cold tub and hot tub and cold tub?
he's a fair amount of time. He's one of those guys. He's a very thick kid, if you will. He's very strong.
When you say thick, is it like I refer to Nick as being thick?
No, he's very strong. I think he's
stubborn,
a little over 200 pounds, and he's just very muscular. He's tough to push around, and you can see just the way he hits guys how sturdy he is on his feet. For a guy that's that strong, he's very flexible, which helps him.
He's really given you guys a different dimension, and some guys really have to work hard to find a check, and it comes second nature to him, and it just seems like it's really snowballed, and David Clarkson's now a guy that's kind of benefited from him, and now it just seems like it's more of a contagious thing.
Yeah, definitely. Leo's a great fit for our group, not only on the ice but in the room too. He's a guy that everybody enjoys having around. He's a good guy to make a couple jokes here and there, and when you can get one of your European guys in there making jokes, as you know from experience, those are always the ones that everybody really enjoys hearing. So
it's the accent that really does it, doesn't it?
Which accent?
It's unbelievable.
He'd be a great fit in the piece
of our room, and he leads by example on the ice, and he's a guy that their line has been very good in terms of creating momentum for our group and, just playing solid all-around hockey.
They must have hated him in that Russian recreation league over there, the way he plays.
You would think so, yeah.
He just doesn't look like that type of Russian hockey league player, does he, Nick?
He's very North American.
Very much so.
Very North American.
Nick, just think, when you won the Dodge Ram Hitter Award.
It was a GMC heavy hitter, but that's okay.
How many... Like, just how many hits would you have?
I don't know. I'd make sure that I had about 10 more than the next guy.
Because this guy, how many hits does he get a night?
They're talking about Kipper's days with the Hartford Whalers, by the way.
Yeah,
Cody.
You were born back then, Cody.
Cody, good luck with the home and home with the Detroit Red Wings. Sportsnet on Friday and Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday.
Thanks for having me.
Good luck, Cody.
He's a lot of fun. Cody Franzen.
Hey, listen, I'm not one to change a winning lineup, but they've got to find a way to get Jake Gartner back in. I'm sorry. $4 million new contract, and if you want to trade him down the road, you do not devalue an asset by keeping him in the stands. You got to find a way to get him back in.
Yeah, and you got to see how he responds. He's paid this is a knock for him. This is a blow for him. So it'll be interesting to see when he comes back and how he responds. I think they should get him back in. I agree with
you. It was not too long ago where he was either untouchable, yep, or you're going to have to pay through the nose, mm-hmm, to get him. When you have them in the stands and you start trade conversations with your GM on the other side of the phone, and he starts the conversation with, well, if you're not going to use them, I'll take them off your hands. That's not a good thing. That's not a good thing. You got to get them back out in the ice.
Hockey Central at noon, 3 stars from last night, a 3-game night in the NHL featuring some incredible performances, goaltending-wise. Jimmy Howard was great in that shootout loss. But I'm going to go first star Mike Boddicker of the Arizona Coyotes, who posted a 7-4 win over the Edmonton Oilers. And he now has 5 goals on the year, a hat trick last night, 6 points. And Phoenix, kind of after that opening game stumble, found their legs a little bit.
Did you call an audible? Because that's not the guy that you mentioned earlier.
Change. Well, I was going to, you know, Paul Byron really impressed me. But
maybe almost 20 minutes last night.
They got outplayed so bad, and Boddicker has a hat trick and another win. So,
it was a good move by you.
I did not have to call an audible on Hiller. 50 shots, the difference in Chicago. Ramo the night before, they're getting great goaltending. If the team can catch up a little bit and match their goaltender.
Did you see
they'll be better off, but right now they're leaning heavily on the guys between the pipes.
Did you see the first shot on Hiller last night? And he kind of waved at it with his blocker.
He thought he was awful.
And he was like, whoa. Yeah.
He's off balance.
So go ahead.
I had to call an audible because I was in the gym and wasn't able to get Hiller's name emailed quick enough.
Your friend's gym?
No, I was working out in the gym.
Oh, you were working out in a gym.
I was on the bike, yeah. My gluteus maximus, as you know, was injured this summer, and I've had to just bike instead of jog. So, and
I'm still wearing a girdle now.
So I picked Bergeron from the Boston Bruins. And is there a more complete player in the NHL? And what he brings to the table every night, as John Shannon so eloquently put it last night.
Why don't we just bring John on and get rid of you? Seriously.
Well, he keeps walking by wanting to get on. We got to get him on sometime. I mean, he won't leave us when we're on. Oh, there he is hiding over there behind the chair.
Yeah, Bergeron.
McLean gets sick. I can work.
Well, you know, Boston gets the win last night, and then they've got the back-to-back with Montreal. What do you think happens with Lucic?
Okay, first of all, Lucic needs tonight just to focus on getting his game going. I would think that
this
whole
goes back to the
Stanley
Cup playoffs.
I think the whole handshake thing is, it should be, not that it's a distant memory, but he has not played well. He's not off to a good start. He's got to go out and just find his game before he can think about any type of revenge against the Montreal Canadiens.
Montreal Canadiens are reeling a little bit right now, too. I mean, they're coming off a pretty good thrashing in Tampa.
But a great road trip.
Yeah, they're frustrated. But talking to one of their management guys, the few that'll speak to me, said that they're playing in spurts. You know, they'd like to see a little more consistency throughout their lineup and throughout the game. So it should be a good test.
Yeah,
Boston were not very good in that series last year, guys. I mean, as that series progressed last year, Boston had trouble keeping up with the Montreal Canadiens. So it'll be interesting to watch tonight from a speed perspective where the Bruins are.
And you can see it on Sportsnet 360 with Jeff Merrick, Doug McLean, and Elliot Friedman. What do you have planned on that show tonight?
Well, obviously we're going to have a look at the Wes Lucic situation off the top, and hopefully nothing transpires there. Hopefully it just is good hits and not any retribution, which I don't expect. And we're going to look at the Bruins' inability to cover PK and the penalty kill. They wouldn't adjust in the playoffs last year, and it cost them. Interesting because—
You were paying attention on the conference call.
Interesting because Claude Julien is one of the best penalty-killing coaches in the NHL. That's his history. I mean, let's not forget, Babcock gave him that role with Team Canada in the Olympics to run their penalty-killing. So you would think that if any team could adapt to cover PK, they would be able to. So it'll be fun to watch that tonight.
I'll give you some good ideas when you usually call me around 3 p.m.
Yeah,
too.
Great. I appreciate that. You know what? You've become such a
We've run out of time. Thank you very much, everybody, for watching and listening on Sportsnet.
Drouin was sent down for conditioning.
No, he's not sent down. He's not sent down.
Yes, he was sent down.
You have eight seconds. It's not a reassignment.
No.
Okay, when you're that young, just conditioning.
Right.
He's on the roster.